That's a lot of pressure, though, as a hairstylist sometimes.
Unless you've been doing their hair for 7 years.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, seriously, you'd just be giving her a mullet.
But I said yes. Crazy. We always have to keep passion for what we do in some way, shape, or form.
Yo, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up? Good evening.
Good evening. So, this is a milestone for us. This is episode 30.
Yeah, man. Big 3-0.
Big 3-0. So, we always talk about the number, like, you know, like we said in the past, but I don't think we need to actually talk about that. That's kind of a big deal. We hit 30 episodes.
Yeah, on decade, I think we just let it be.
Yeah, let it be. Know? That's good. So, I'm pretty excited about tonight's episode, man. This is a buddy from back in Atlanta, so from the roots. So I don't even think I'm going to have to do a whole lot of introduction. Most people are going to know him, but we'll save that for just a second. I do just want to go ahead and give a shout out to we did a charity event, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, a couple weekends ago.
For Crowns of Courage. So it was awesome. Humble Hairdressers and Wink Salon chipped in and did a bunch of donation haircuts. They were hair donations for Crowns of Courage, which is like a children's cancer foundation that makes these really cool wigs for the kids. And we had 28 hair donations that day.
Yeah, it was an awesome event.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that was unique about it too is that everybody was donation based. Like everybody was donating their hair.
Yeah.
I haven't done an event like that. I've done other cancer things where like people shave their head in solidarity or whatever, but this one where people were giving their hair away was super cool.
Well, I mean, if you're a hairstylist listening to this, you know how many days you've gone through the motions all day at work just to chop off a half an inch of hair all day long.
For real.
And this day we got to chop off like 20 inches, 14 inches, 10 inches. I mean, every single one was like a massive makeover. It was awesome.
I think that second haircut I did is the most hair I've ever cut off of somebody at once.
That was unbelievable.
I mean, that might have been 30 inches. Maybe there's our 30 massive, right there. Yeah. It was a serious ponytail.
Yeah, it was really awesome. So we worked with Bella Chic Salon here in Asheville. And Amy with Crowns of Courage, thank you all so much. We had a really great time. And actually, tonight's beer was donated by Amy. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But I want to go ahead and introduce our guest tonight. I'm pretty excited. This is Joshua Mitchin. Did I get that right, Josh?
Yeah, you did.
All right. Sweet. Awesome. Sweet, sweet. We both got a little bit difficult last names to pronounce. But anyway, good old-fashioned Atlanta boy. Glad to have you on here. R&Co educator, kind of another guy like me that made a career switch after a while. So it's good to have you on here, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Where are you at, man? Where are you located?
I'm currently located in Milton, Georgia.
Okay.
It's a little town called Crabapple, like in the Alpharetta, cool. Like North Georgia.
So that's like north of Atlanta.
And the burbs, but the nice burbs.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
We got Equestrian Farms.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a funny story, man. One of my first jobs was at a horse farm in Crabapple, and I got fired because we weren't allowed to talk to the girls. And one day the bosses all left, and me and my buddy Mark, we were like 17. And the girls came up to us after the bosses left, and we're like, do you guys want to ride the horses with us around like a little circle? And we were both like, yeah, of course we do. So we got on the horses and did like a circle lap around there. And then the bosses found out and we got fired next day.
I mean, they engaged you.
They did.
You didn't talk to them. They talked to you.
Well, the funny thing is we actually worked for like a company that owned a bunch of properties. So they just moved us to a different property. So.
Right.
But we got moved quickly. So, but it was funny. So yeah, that is like that whole area is nothing but like equestrian stuff. It's crazy. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's super. It's the place to live now. Like, I can't afford to live here if I was to sell my house. Like, no way.
Yeah, no kidding. I think that's the story everywhere right now, right? You can't sell your house and afford it at the same time. Like, I mean, I can't afford my house for what it's worth now.
Right, like
I mean,
you couldn't buy it now.
No, totally. So anyway, man, we're glad to have you on. Are you drinking a beer tonight?
Yeah, I'm a Basement. It's a local brewery here in Atlanta.
Awesome, man. What is that?
It's where the reason I chose this beer is because that's where we did the R&Co show at that brewery.
Awesome. Where is the brewery at?
You know, they got a couple of them. We did the show in it, in like, downtown Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
at their place. That's where my whole R&Co career started.
Awesome, man. That's great. Well, we came with some New Belgium tonight. Amy with Crowns of Courage actually gave us these beers. This was like our gift the day we worked.
The thank you when we left. We're like, we got to save it for the podcast so we talk about it.
Yeah, that was Jordan's idea. It was like, we were about to crack the beer, and Jordan's like, nope, let's do it on the podcast.
So save them.
We've got Voodoo Ranger Juicy Haze IPA. So, and this is, how many ounces? This is like a big boy.
It's one of those weird. Is this like a 19.2 or something?
It's a pint, is what it says.
A pint. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a lot. Oh, it's a 1 pint and 3.2 fluid ounces.
Boom. 19.2. I was right.
Yeah, you are right.
That's a new weird beer size, but cheers. I dig it.
Cheers, right. Fellas.
Cheers.
Hey. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, bro. All right. So we're both – are you in a basement or are you just in a regular on the first floor?
No. No, I'm in my dining area right now.
Okay, so we're in the basement. But my basement, I have a painting of – what is this thing? Is this a deer? Something like that. It's like a deer or an elk. And it's got antlers. And then behind you is a painting of a cow, a bull with horns. So we both had like kind of the same vibe going on. It's kind of cool. So
I already took a picture. It's going to be the post for the,
100%.
For the podcast.
Yeah, that's going to be good. It's going to be good. So, man, I met you, and I don't even know if you remember this, but I actually met you, I think, in Chicago the first time. We were at ABS, I think.
And I think so.
I was with Candy Shaw at our like Sunlight. Well, I don't know if we were at, I don't even know if we had Sunlights at that point, but we were at the Jameson Shaw booth, and you and Stacy came up and you were talking to Candy, and I met you then. So
yeah,
it's been a while, but, so I, you know, I, we kind of warmed up a little bit, but you and I are similar in that this is kind of like our second careers. And I really always gravitate towards people like that, but your first career is quite a bit different. So where are you from?
You know, I grew up in Rockmart, Georgia. It's like northwest Georgia, up in the burbs. So for me, like growing up, college was not going to be in the cards for me. I went to private school for majority of like my upbringing. Grew up on a farm, but a non-working farm. Like, I think my dad just had this fantasy of like having cows and horses. And like, we had like a rodeo pen, and you know, the guys would come out like every Friday night and they would rope, you know, it was like, we had our own little rodeo every weekend.
Did you ride the
bull? And, no, I was
behind you?
No, no, dude, I was the shoot guy. I was the guy that like hit the chute for the cow to come out, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think my dad always hoped that I would be his healer, you know? But me and horses just didn't get along growing up, man. I got bucked off more times than I know. And I'm still terrified of horses.
Man, they're scary.
Dude, like seriously. So I grew up on a non-working farm as well. Northern Wisconsin, 15 acres. And we had horses and a bunch of different animals. And like, I love horses. Like I love how like beautiful and powerful they are. And I love to look into their eyes, but I never liked riding them. I just don't trust horses. They're so damn strong, and something about them, man, we didn't jive.
Yeah.
Me neither. I mean, man, I just, it's something about horse. They know, like, horses, they're amazing beings that know, like, if you vibe with them or not, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So college was out of the card. So
college is out of the card. So, you know, when I went and talked to, you know, so to give you a little bit of background, so my, last 2 years of high school, I convinced my parents, like, to let me go to a public school, to go take art classes. 'Cause I was interested in art. I'm not an artist. Like, I can't draw to save my life, but I was very interested in art, and they let me go to a public school to take art. And I was taking like 4 hours of art class my last junior and senior year. And I was trying to build a portfolio to go to Parsons School of Art in Manhattan. And I can remember my dad saying, listen, if I'm going to pay for you to go to a school and like live in, you know, Manhattan, New York, you gotta be able to do more than just finger paint. Like you gotta have a plan, buddy, you know, my family business was electrical construction work, like commercial electrical work. And I think my dad always thought that, like, you know, I might play around with like the arts or whatever, or do something and then, you know, come to the family business. But during that time, I was trying to create a portfolio to get accepted to Parsons School of Art. And then 9/11 happened. I was a senior in high school. And everything shifted for me. And at that point in my life, I knew that, like, I wanted to go into military. I wanted to serve. I just didn't know what branch of military I wanted to go into.
Yeah. So how did you choose?
I went and talked to all of them. Yeah. I went and talked to the Army. I went and talked to the Navy, the Air Force. And I was like, maybe I want to be a pararescue jumper in the Air Force. I was really fantasizing about being a Navy SEAL. And The only reason I didn't go into the Navy, because I was like, if I don't make it as a Navy SEAL, then I don't want to be a paint chipper on a boat, you know? And then I walked into the Marine Corps recruiter's office and I seen these badass dudes, kind of like this picture back here, not a cow, but these badass dudes coming up out of the water with their goggles on, you know, with the AR-15s, like, you know, crouching down. And I was like, what do they do? And they were like, that's Force Recon Marines. They just changed the subject on me. And I was like, how do I become one of those guys? Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, you got to do 4 years in the Marines. And then as a reenlistment incentive, you can try out for that. But You scored really high on the ASVAB. Like, let's go look at some other jobs, because the recruiters didn't want to tell me, like, you're too small, bro. Yeah. Like, you weigh like 120 pounds soaking wet. Like, you're 5'3". There's just absolutely no way you're going to go into that. And I was like, maybe I want to do that, because somebody told me I couldn't do something. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I went into the Marine Corps open contract.
What is open
contract? So, yeah,
what's that?
That means like somebody would have passed the ASVAB test by the bare skin of their teeth, and that, you know, maybe the drill instructors would kind of like guide them into a job based on what they do in basic recruit training.
So you didn't have like a chosen like direction going in.
No,
so
that's what I went.
Okay.
I went in open contract. And so me being the smallest guy in my platoon and boot camp, they call you the house mouse, right? So I had to make the drill instructor's bed every day. And towards the end of my recruit training, and they were looking at everybody's, I guess, like what the next step for them was, they were like, McMichin, are you a fucking idiot? Like, you're open contract. You could go be a paint chipper on a boat. Like, I can remember they had me scrubbing the toilet with like the powder bleach, you know, and I'm in there and they're like, you're an idiot, but we're going to take care of you. You're going to go see the wizard, which is the psych ward. And, you're going to do a bunch of these tests. Little did I know they were trying to take care of me. And, so I got orders to be Yankee White. Yankee White is presidential security at Camp David. So the next step from recruit training was to go to School of Infantry and pass School of Infantry, and then I would go to be Yankee White and work on Camp David and do presidential security, because I had a squeaky clean record, right? Mm. So when I was at School of Infantry, in the middle of training, I can still remember, and I'm still friends with this gentleman today on social media. At that time, his name was Gunny Acosta, little short guy, stocky, tattoos, like sleeved out. And in the Marine Corps, they don't wear insignia on their utility uniform, like their camis. Okay. So like the Army wears like where their patches, like what unit they are, but the Marines, we don't wear anything like that. But if you're a reconnaissance Marine, you have the gold the gold jump wings and the scuba bubble. And I remember that Marine coming onto the parade deck to give us like an announcement. And I was like, oh, that's a recon Marine, you know? And I, that's the first like time in my military career that I got really excited going, this recon Marine's about to come give us a speech, you know? And he said, hey, we're at wartime. The Marine Corps is changing, you know? Who thinks they can pass a screening to be, you know, to go into recon indoctrination platoon called RIP? And everybody raises their hand. And so they just weed us all out. And long story short, I went to the screening and we went on to the Camp Lejeune base. And that's the first time we had ever been on like a Fleet Marine base. And I remember seeing the first recon Marines, and they had these hoodies on and they were like out of reg a little bit, like their hair was a little bit longer. And I remember going to the pull up bar and they would just not count any of my pull ups. And they were like, I'm just going to tell you, they were like, listen, dudes, like, I'm going to tell you this right now. If you decide to come to RIP, we're going to break you. We're going to haze you to a point. We're going to break you because the Marine Corps now is softening its standards and lowering its standards to let you little maggots come on as straight out of school of infantry to try out, because this is like a prestige thing. Like the Marine Corps has never done that where it's like not let people do 4 years and like their reenlistment incentive is to come try out for special forces. Right. Mm-hmm. So they were pissed and I give it to them. I understand why they were pissed.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of us that made it. They really weed you out through the swimming portion, you know, treading water, nobody knows how long we're going to tread water, and we're passing a brick around and they're like sharking us, pulling us underwater. And we're all like got our camis on, and every, like all the Marines are going to the side of the pool deck, like quitting, everybody's tapping out. Right. And so I just knew that like, this was my one opportunity to be a recon Marine, and I just stuck it out and somehow like made it through the cracks and went to RIP. And, you know, was told like, hey man, you got this really cool job to be Yankee White. Like, why are you going to give it up to go to, you know, to RIP to be a recon Marine? Cause they're just going to weed you out there.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to be open contract again. Like you're being a dumbass. Like, why are you doing this? And I was like, well, this is the whole reason I joined the Marine Corps anyway. So I just need to know what's going to happen. So I just went for it. And there I met some of the most amazing human beings of my life. I met a guy, Eddie Heredia, had been in the Marine Corps already 4 years. He was with Fast Company. Mark Smikowski, he had come, I think, from an infantry unit already 4 years. So many badass dudes that already done 4 years, and they were kind of really trying to take care of us young guys, you know, because there was only a couple of us that actually like made the screening.
So once you made it through, they weren't resentful because you got to do it without the 4 years?
Oh no, they still were. Like,
yeah, totally.
Oh no. Like I think every day the instructors woke up, they were like, how are we going to break that? They called me Chicken because my last name is McMitchin.
Yeah.
So they were like, my call sign now was Chicken. They were like, how are we going to break this guy today? Like, we're going to get him to quit.
Kept a target. We're going
to
get him
to quit. And it was like every day. And this guy, like Eddie Heredia, would be like, dude, don't let him get inside your head. Just make it to breakfast. And then we're going to make it to lunch. And then we'll make it to dinner. And then when we're on these like death runs, just get to the bend in the road. And that's what he would tell me to do. Just go to the bend in the road. Don't think about like how much longer, how, you know, much further we got to go. Just get to that damn bend in the road. And, long story short, man, I made it through all of the training. I went to, amphibious reconnaissance school. I got to the last week of training and I started running 104 fever and I got dropped, and those instructors that hated me had to come pick me up in a van and drive me back to Camp Lejeune. And I thought that I was going to go to an infantry unit. And I went and talked to a superior and said, hey, I'm willing to go through day one. I'll go through the training all over again at day one. And I had to go, I had to start all over again at day one. And I made it through, and I ended up getting on Eddie's team, and I got pipelined, and I went through many, many schools. And we were getting ready for the Battle of Fallujah. And that was like 2004, 2005. And we got this platoon commander, that was just a badass dude. And we were like, where did he come from? And he was always like giving us like these statistics, like, hey, like number wise, we're going to go take over this city. And because of there's 21 of us in a platoon, not all of us are coming home. So make sure that when you train, you know, when you have to go look into somebody's eyes of a mother, a brother, a father, a sister, knowing that you trained your ass off here and you left it all here before we go in country, you know? So that was like, that really resonated with me. I was like, man, what do you mean we're not going to make it all back? You know? Yeah. He just was like really, you know, real with us. And then when we got deployed, I was part of a sniper team. I was a spotter. I was a JTAC. So I was a joint air support guy. So I called in like naval gunships, artillery, air F-18s, airstrikes. And I was just a corporal. I was an E-4. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I was doing an officer's job, you know, mm-hmm. And I was a nervous wreck. And there was many times that me and Eddie as a sniper team didn't think we were going to make it out. Like,
so Eddie was on the gun.
Yeah. So okay. I was his spotter. So okay, like gotcha. the way the movies make it out to be is like, it's so not realistic. The way the spotter's like just hanging out, taking a nap. No, we're like locked together. I'm looking through like a Leopold, like, sure. And I'm adjusting the scope the whole time, you know, gotcha. I'm telling him what to hold. And, how you know, out, during
what,
that,
what was like the furthest out you guys were shooting?
Oh man. With the 50 cal, dude, we were reaching out and like we were lobbing them. Well, I mean, we were lobbing them. Yeah, you know, I can't even tell you how far. Like, way further than you know the unknown distance range that we would ever do. Like, we were just, you know, we were there to try to protect the Marines on the ground 1-8, and we were just doing everything we could to just suppress fire for them so they could bound from like building to building, and things just got really crazy, but. During that time, you know, we did our job, and then they pulled us out of the city after 26 days to go blow this bridge up. And I can tell you, I was the lead driver for our platoon, and I was a lead navigator. And as we're driving, dude, we've been fighting for 26 days, you know, in this city, and we were exhausted. And when we come up onto this area where I knew we were going to blow this bridge up, I seen, you know, the telltale signs, the kids are running in the house, the women are grabbing the children, you know, small little boys are doing this to us, you know, so I knew we were about to get contact. Mm-hmm. And I accidentally pulled down the wrong road, and that saved our lives that day. The road that the bridge was on was like, there was like 70 plus people dug in, ready to ambush us, mm-hmm. ready to just take us out. And we fought for 3 hours that day. And we all made it out, you know, but I can tell you this, man, the brotherhood of a bond with another human being, knowing that you might not make it out, this, the level of love and commitment that you have for that human being, you won't ever experience in this life of, you know, of a companion, knowing that like we had made a commitment to one another that, you know what? In the midst of battle, we told each other, like, if one of us dies, I'll be your spirit guide. You know, I'll keep your legacy. And the thing is, we both made it out, and we all made it out, actually. And, I ended up after that finding out that I was having my son, and I had a reenlistment package in to go to MARSOC, which was going to be the new badass Marines. And, found out I was having my son, and my friend Eddie, ripped my contract up and said, hey, you're going to go be a dad now. And I was like, well, I don't know what to do. And he's like, oh, you'll figure it out. And I got out and I tried a couple of jobs. I wasn't good at anything. I was too intense for everything. And I got a contract working for Blackwater Security and went overseas doing security work. And I was loving that, hanging off the side of helicopters, living rap star rich, buying Dodge Vipers, like just being stupid.
Where'd
man.
You go with Blackwater? Where'd you get?
I was back in Iraq. Oh, and I got part of air. So I was a air gunner on a helicopter. And dude, I was just loving life. And just at the same time, I knew that I was trying to buy time, you know, having my son like as a 2-year-old boy, talking to him through the internet, coming home every, 90 days, whatever. But I was kept in contact with my friend Eddie, and he was with MARSOC, and we decided, hey, we're going to come home and go to Vegas together and go see this like UFC fight. Well, I got home a little bit before he did. And then I got a call from a Marine I hadn't talked to in a while. And he said, hey man, where are you at? And I was like, oh, I'm at home. He's like, go in your house, sit down. I need to tell you something. And he said, hey man, Eddie got killed. He was the first Marine to get killed with MARSOC. And I was like devastated. Like I was crushed. I was like, I was in such denial that he had passed that I really didn't, accept it, because before Eddie had passed, when I was getting ready to get out of the Marines, my friend Mark, that was my roommate that I post a lot on Instagram about, Mark had asked me to extend my contract in the Marines and come back over to a deployment that they were doing in Iraq, because they were getting hit with so many IEDs and they wanted me to be like the navigator, And I told him no, because I just had my son, and I was getting out. And then a couple of weeks later they got blown up. And when I went to his memorial service, it was like, it was the worst like feeling of survivor's guilt, like, man, maybe I should have went back over. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, that whole feeling of like, what if, and then now losing Eddie was like, I was devastated, and I did his service. I went back to Iraq with my contract, and I later lost my team to a helicopter crash. And at that point in my life, I just said, hey, Eddie, I'm sitting here on the steps of my trailer. I don't know what I believe in anymore. I want to believe that there's life after death. I want to believe that that there's like some kind of like purpose, like just give me a sign. Like if you tell me I had to be a trash man, I'll go be the best trash man the world's ever seen. And that night he told me in a dream, like just like the movies, like all white and shit and, sitting on a footlocker and I'm trying to like do this combination lock and I can't figure out the numbers. And he's like, hey man, I don't have a lot of time, but you're supposed to be a hairdresser. And I was like, what? And he was like,
yeah.
Nah, man. He's like, it's not going to make a lot of sense, but you'll get signs along the way. Just trust the process. Like, just do me a favor, trust the process, and just know that you're supposed to be a hairdresser. So the next day, man, couldn't stop thinking about it. Wasn't going to tell any of my friends. Okay.
Sure.
I mean, I'm working for Blackwater. I'm not going to be like, hey, man, you think I should be a hairdresser?
Right, they're going to think you're a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll think I'm more than a clown. They'll be like, man, anyways, so I went back in my trailer and I got on the computer and I typed in straight male hairdresser and I started reading about Vidal Sassoon and his story and how his mom had a premonition that he was supposed to be a hairdresser and he didn't want to be a hairdresser and that he had want you know he had been in the military. And I was like, holy shit, that's like, what a coincidence. But then I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. So I call up a big box school here in Atlanta, the Paul Mitchell School. And I'm like, hey, like, do y'all have any information you can send me to an APO address? And they're like, we don't even know what that means, APO address. And I'm like, do you have like a VA program? Do you honor the Montgomery GI Bill? And they didn't even know what that was. I get a VA rep and he's going through my DD-214. Like that's what you get when you get out. Right.
Sure.
And he's looking at like all my awards and he's looking at all my schools and he's like, hey, I went to that school you wanted me to approve. And I just want to let you know, like, they don't have a barber program there. they do like nails and like facials and like, I'm just making sure you're like, yeah, you cool with that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. And he was like, all right, man, whatever, you know? And so I get enrolled in the school and I go home to tell my country family, like, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to go to hair school. And I remember rolling up and I'd taken the doll heads out of the boxes, right? And I'm looking at the doll heads, like filling the hair. And I'm like, oh, it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, I'm going to like style their hair. I got this tripod or whatever. And my dad sees the doll heads in the back of my car before knowing what I'm doing. And he pulls me aside and he says, hey, listen, I don't know what kind of funny business you got yourself into. I know you've been over in Iraq for a while.
Yeah.
But he's like, listen. He's like, let me tell you, dude, those doll heads don't come in the house.
That's hilarious. Don't care how lonely you get.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, dad, no, it's not what you think. So like I bring the doll heads in and I'm telling my mom that, you know, like I'm trying to tell her like I've enrolled in beauty school, you know. And so like my mom's about six glasses of wine in, right? And I'm like, I got the tripod out. I got the doll head on. And I'm like, you know, I'm like combing it out and shit. And my mom's like, my mom's like, well, and you got to picture my mom, dude, country woman, all White House, Black Market, like well polished, hair's always done. You know, she's like, well, I kind of always knew you got best dressed in high school. And I'm sure.
That's awesome.
And she's like, I'm sure it wasn't accepted in the Marines.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, you know, if you want to tell me your boyfriend's name now, that's okay. Cause I accept you for who you are. I'm
like, that's awesome.
I'm like, mom, I still like girls, man.
Yeah.
Just you know? And she's like, she's like, it's okay. I know we raised you Southern Baptist. Like your daddy's going to take some time, but you know, just know where we take the dogs to get them groomed. That's two men. They have a nice business together.
Now, do you do your mom's hair now?
Oh yeah, she loves it. Man.
Well, and, I mean, I've always said, man, because my mom's kind of the same, man. She's like Southern Belle, like you know, really prim and proper. I'm not even sure I've ever seen my mom without makeup on, but I feel like the day I told my mom I was going to be a hairstylist was the best day of her whole life because she was like, "Hell yeah, I'm going to get free hair for the rest of my life," you know?
Yes,
for sure. Oh, man, they love it.
Yeah, my mom was pumped too. I think my dad was actually a little perplexed though, because my dad was a Marine that was in Vietnam. So I grew up like Marine dad, and he was like, "Go do hair for real?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Yeah," and he's like, "Well, you'll probably be good at it. Go for it, man."
Yeah, my dad was kind of
See, my dad's so supportive, but he doesn't know how to be supportive, like how to like you know, the lingo. He's always just kind of like, "Hey, you still like fixing hair?" And I'm like, "Fixing." Yeah. Fixing hair.
Totally.
Yeah, he's still a little like homophobe about it. He's like, all right, yeah, you know, that's your business. You don't tell me how to do my business, I don't tell you how to do your business. Kind of thing.
I get it. My two best friends, when I told them I was going to do hair, they're like, hold on, what? And I think I was like 3 months into working at James and Shaw, and they both came in for a haircut and they're like, dang. You work around all these girls all the time?
I was
okay, I get it now. So,
well, to give you a little bit of fast track, like, so like when I got a job at, I started working at Doss Salon for Don Shaw. You know?
I didn't know you worked for Don.
And Don was like, oh, you don't have a license? Like, hey, he called me Waldo for like the first year I worked there. Like, I don't think he even knew my name.
Yeah.
You know, he was very supportive and he was, you know, he was a really good mentor at the time in my life, but I didn't make shit for money. Mm-hmm. I think I made $1,200 a month and every day I just would throw my stuff in a trash bag. Like, I can't do this shit no more. Like what have I given up? I've given up like my six-figure job to do this hair thing. And my gut just kept saying like, dude, you got to stick out a little bit, just a little bit longer. Like today's not the day to quit. And every day I quit on myself. And, I think what really resonated with me was when my son turned 5 and I got visitation rights back and like, he was back in my life again. We had an apartment and he was getting ready for bed, and I'll never forget this till as long as I live. And I wrote it down. He said, "Hey, I want to tell you something." He said, I met your friend. Your friend, he got shot in the neck, and he was in the hallway, and he wants me to tell you that you're doing the right thing because you have me now." Wow. And
holy shit, man.
Dude, like, wow. I got so emotional because I was like, "Who told you that? Did your mom tell you that?" And he's like, "No, don't get upset. Your friend told me that, and he just wants you to know that you're doing the right thing because you have me." And I've never once looked back and said, "Am I doing the right thing or the wrong thing?" You know. And when I go and I go into accounts and I share this story with people and I tell people, like, "Listen, like, I know it's cool that I got this like crazy sign, but I never asked for those signs. Like, just trust the process of what you're doing. And if something comes to your mind and says, like, hey, maybe you're supposed to go open a horse farm, then maybe that's unique to you, you know, and what in this universe is aware of your thoughts, you know?" And not to get like spiritual or like, you know, religious or anything. It's like, everybody's always looking for what's next. But I think like you have to really look with what's in. And that's what I love so much about what I do now as an educator, is just going into accounts and just resonating that focal point with people, is that like, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to not have it all together. It's okay to feel like people don't believe in you, but believe in yourself. Like, just get up every day not knowing, like, okay, maybe this is not going to be the best page of your story, but you're just going to write it anyways, you know? And that transfer of energy has to come within you and like how you start your day, you know? And it's like, man, I say it's hair church, like whatever you want to call it. Like, I hate using the word church, but like doing that and going into these accounts and like embracing that with them and like feeling that, dude, we have this energy that like circles through the room. It's like, it's electrifying. It's powerful. It's more than just like scissors and hair. It's about like, how do we love ourselves first and foremost? And then go in and like touch somebody and give them the art of touch and the art of like shape, you know, before we even get into like the whole like a haircut or like how are we gonna formulate that. It's like, how do you formulate that with yourself? Because I think hairdressers are some of the worst people at self-care.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, it's like, I think they take care of so many people all the time that they forget to take care of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird too, because I think sometimes like hairstylists like almost don't even want to take care of themselves sometimes. Like it's like there's a disconnect because we put it all out for other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%, man.
Yeah, yeah. So you got out of Paul Mitchell and you went to work for DOS. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then okay. I went to Sassoon.
And then you went to Sassoon in Lenox Mall?
No, I went to out to LA. I had a okay. Rolex watch. I had yeah. like I don't anymore. I got a Garmin now, dude, baby.
You got the right watch now, bro.
Yeah, I had a Rolex, and this jeweler like wanted it so bad, and he's like, "Hey, man, what would it take to buy that watch off you?" And I said, "Listen, there's this school out in LA I want to go to, Vidal Sassoon." He's like, "Hey, find out like what it would cost for you to go there. Tell me like, all the, you know, details of it, and I'll pay for it for the watch." Mm-hmm. And so I met him at a restaurant, and I had the Sassoon like certificate, like of like acceptance to come to their school. And I took a picture of it and said, "Hey, this might be in a book one day." Like, we'll shake hands on it. I'm going to not watch time roll no more. Yeah. And, I'm going to go out to Sassoon. Now that I know what that watch is worth, fuck, I should have never sold it.
Did you go to the Sassoon that's in Santa Monica?
Yeah, Santa Monica. And that's where I met everybody, like Tina Anderson, Sally Rogerson, Stephen Moody. Like, yeah. I met them all, and they were just there at the academy. That's and awesome. it was just like a beautiful thing, like to be in that. That was like 2011, and just to be in that atmosphere of culture and like movement. And like, I was just like, "Oh man, I know what I want now. I know I want to be a part of this kind of movement." And that's where I went to the hair shows and I met Nick Arojo.
Yeah.
And I just started following that motherfucker around, and he would turn around and be like, dude, who are you? And like, why are you following me around? I was like, I don't know. Like, I just think you have a lot of wisdom, and I think that you're like great at what you do. And he's like, let's have a drink. And then he was like, dude, love your story. Do you know how to cut hair? And I was like, I think so. I think I can. And he's like, all right, make a video of your story, of your brand, and I want to feature it at Expo in New York.
Nice.
And he did, and that's where everybody was there, you know. Mm-hmm. And he brought me on stage, and I was just still young. I was only like 3-4 years in the industry, and I got a little discouraged because I met some giants that, you know, what, you know, kind of cornered me at the bathroom, said, hey man, I don't have to like you, I gotta respect you, you only been doing hair like 4 years. And I was thinking in my head, like, what did I accomplish in the Marine Corps in 4 years? You know?
Yeah.
Why is it that it's frowned upon in another industry that you have to do 20 years to have respect? Like, well, what? That's
one thing I will say about Nick too, that I think is really cool, is that he doesn't care how long somebody's been doing hair. He does. Yeah. He picks up like on the energy thing. And he's like, yeah, somebody can be doing hair for 2 years and be way better than somebody that's been doing hair for 20 years.
Totally.
Yeah. That's what I loved about him. And dude, we were like a boy band for a long time, and me and Nick are still friends, you know. But that's where I met Adam Federico. And me and Adam's had like this special bond for like maybe like 13 years now. And I've just always went out to his academy and took all the classes with the advanced academy. And, you know, Adam just, he believes in me, and I believe in him. And, you know, he came out to Atlanta last year, and we spent a couple of days together before I got hired with R&Co. And he loved my story and loved the energy. And I told him, you're never going to have to like, you ask me to do something, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, like every time. And it's never going to be about the ego. It's about like the craft. It's about like giving back to people. And it's about like, it's not about me, it's about them. And I think that's what's so like gotten away from the industry, is that like we're flooded with so many influencers and educators, and like, I do this and I do that, but where have you been educated? And where's the humbleness of like what it is you want to share with other human beings? You know what I mean? Like, when you call yourself an educator, what do you want to educate? Like, what do you want to give without saying anything about your own accomplishments? You know, my mentors told me, they said, tell me who you are without telling me your accomplishments. Yeah. And that took me a minute to really think about, like, oh, I was like, well, I guess I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, you know? And the way they mentored me was like, hey, could you tie your shoes blindfolded? And I was like, yeah, I think so. And they were like, well, could you tie your shoes if you had to draw it on the dry erase board? Like, show me how you tie your shoes, draw it. Like, don't even think about it, just draw it. And I was like, I can't, I have to think about it. And they said, because it's a muscle memory, it's a memorized motion. So is haircutting a memorized motion for you? Like, are you a cook that has to go to a cookbook, or are you a chef that understands everything about the density and the face shape and what you're looking at to create something special for somebody? Or are you just going and pulling something from a memorized haircut? And I was like, ooh, yeah, you're hitting some strings there.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah, I like that. Absolutely.
I like that, because I do like to, I mean, I'd love to think that I'm chefing hair all day.
Yeah.
You know? Because it is, it's like, because you can just go through the motions, or you can like really dig into what needs to be built or reduced right now.
Yeah.
And that's when like cutting hair is so much fun.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So you hooked up with Adam and all those, and you worked with Nick for a while. Like, so you started,
yeah, for a
you
long
started
time.
A salon. When did you start your salon?
What year was that? Oh man. Like 12 years ago.
Okay.
So me and Stacy left, we left DOS, and we started like in a studio, and then we went to So I had a friend of mine. Okay. So this is how the salon started. So I had a friend of mine. I worked at a nightclub and he was like a promoter and he would come to my apartment and I was cut his hair in my kitchen. Right. And he was like, when I got back from Sassoon, he was like, dude, you were so serious with those scissors. He's like, hold up. You're serious. Hold up. Let me get on GoDaddy real quick. He's like, holy shit, dude. Serious.com. That's your brand.
There you go.
And I said, that sounds so stupid. Like, that sounds so cheesy. He's like, no. That sticks though. People won't ever forget it. It's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And so the next day he made us a website and then the rest is history, man.
That's awesome. So when one of the times, I don't know if you remember this, but we did a photo shoot over at Salon Posta way back in the day. And it was like, Christo was there. You were there with Jacob. And then I came with a couple models. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember that?
It was
two salons ago, I want to say.
Was it not at Tim Timmons' place?
No, it wasn't at Tim's place. God, I haven't seen Tim in forever. Jeez.
Hold on. I'm gonna take this off.
You're fine. No, it wasn't at Tim's place. It was actually at Steven's place. He had thrown the whole thing together. I don't know. But yeah, because I'd met you once and then we ended up doing this random like Sunday afternoon photo shoot at Steven's. He had thrown the whole thing together. It was just to get some content, basically. So,
yeah, no, I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, just kind of side note. But so Sirius and, yeah, so that's how I met, really kind of how I met Jacob too back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you still got Sirius now, right?
Yeah. No, it's still going strong, man. I mean, we're, we had the 20 chair salon and I loved it. It's just, that's what I thought success was about, was like having, you know, it was all about like knowing that you had like a big salon and saying, hey, you arrived. Right. Mm-hmm. But before even COVID happened, I knew within the first couple of weeks, this wasn't my destiny. This was me hiring my friends, high performers, not people of high trust.
Yeah.
You know, can you still hear me?
Yeah, totally.
So, that's what I talk about a lot when I go into accounts now, is like, when you hire people, don't just hire people of high performance. They need to be of high trust. Like, would you trust them with your money and your wife or your money and your car? You know, because people of high trust will go and get the information they need to be successful. But if you just hire people of high performance, they'll sabotage your business 100%. Yeah.
And I don't really trust most hairstylists with my car either, though.
No, I don't.
Just throwing
that
out there.
With my own car.
Totally. Man, I've ridden with a couple hairstylists, man. They're crazy as hell.
Yeah. You know, and I, dude, I love being in that energy to create and to be with a team. But we live in times now where it's like, you know, it sucks, but everywhere the stylist drives home from the salon, they see like beauty mall this, studio this, loft this, be your own boss this. And I can only imagine what that would be like working for a big box manufacturer and going home knowing that, like, when I drive home, I'm going to pass 10 shopping centers that have independent salon lofts that are trying to market to me to say, be independent, be your own boss, make your own hours, like, don't run the rat race no more, you know, and that gets in your head.
Sure. That's the big battle right now in this industry, is that, like,
it's not that that's bad. It's just, you have to ask yourself, like, how do you carry culture with that?
Yeah. Yeah. The culture, you know, thing is the tough part.
Carry culture with that. Yeah. If you're not a part of a team, like, how do you create culture? And like, dude, I got so depressed before like working for R&Co because I didn't have that anymore. I didn't have that team camaraderie, culture, everything, because that's what's the essence that gives the beauty industry such beauty within the hairdresser, is like knowing that you're a part of something whether it's a podcast or like doing something like this or like being part of like a community of people doing something, because nobody wants to be in a 10 by 10 room with no windows or maybe a window just doing their clients all day. Yeah. Like you got to, then that means you're not in love with the industry. You're just doing it for hours, for dollars, for money at that point.
Yeah. You turn into a machine and less of a human.
And Instagram likes at that point too, you know?
Hairdresser, because you thought you were going to make a lot of money. You became a hairdresser because you did hair to somebody and it was like, that was fucking cool.
Yep.
It like you were in a kitchen somewhere and you did your friend's hair and you were like, that was fucking cool.
Absolutely. It made
me feel alive. That maybe I fucked that up, but or maybe I messed that up, but they trusted me.
Yeah, absolutely. With,
and if they said they liked it, that made you feel like just the dopamine is like so much more than just a job or anything. That's what got us into this industry to begin with. Well, is when somebody go ahead.
I think too, like we've talked before, like when you go in, it's, when I used to go teach, sometimes one of the questions I like to ask was like, when was the last time that doing hair was fun? And a lot of times the answer would be like when you didn't know what the hell you were doing. Because it is, it's like you're just rolling through and you're like, I'm going to try this thing. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But when it works, it's so exciting. Which is kind of like that color I did today. I had a client that brought this, like, it looked like home bleach job from the 90s, really splotchy. And I was like, this is going to be so fun. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go through and just do hair like I don't know how to do hair. And no, it was so fun. All, like, zero boundaries, full trust. You know, she was like, just do it. And like going in and just doing this really messy block coloring, texturizing the hell out of the hair. And I was like, it did. It made me feel like I was 22 in a kitchen doing my friend's hair. And it felt amazing.
Yeah, it was cool too, man. It looked really cool. Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I mean, I think that's like, God, there's so much there, man. Like, when was it fun? When is it fun? You know, because like I was saying about that Crowns of Courage event, like some days we just go through the motions all day long, you know, and like the high point for me sometimes is just the conversations, you know, but then I get those days where I really get to do something cool, man, you know, and that's a big deal, you know. And I think, you know, for us to have this podcast, for you to have your education with R&Co, this allows us these opportunities to kind of like flex this, like, you know, artistic muscle on the side and keep it like fresh, you know what I mean? So I think, you know, if you listen to the intro of the podcast, there's a line where we say you always have to keep the passion, you know, and that's it. You got to actively pursue the passion of hair all the time. You can't ever go to the 10 by 10 box and just be okay with that. You know?
100%.
Yeah. So,
you know,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, taking like what I've learned through being a hairdresser, being in the special forces military, what I've learned about human beings is that we all want three things. We want to live, love, and matter.
Yep.
And it's just how we choose to do that.
So glad you didn't say live, love, laugh. I was worried for a second there.
You know, how do you live? How do you love? And did anything you ever fucking really worry about in life even matter?
Yeah. You know, we were having a conversation earlier about this, like how, like, you know, I guess I just want to be successful. And how do you define that success? You know, and the matter part, I think, is that.
Well, it's like, it's those screenshots that you're so scared to take down on social media. Like when you post something and you keep refreshing and like, damn, nobody's liking it. No, should I take it down? But it means something to you. Mm-hmm. Because so many people live a life through a screen and they live a life through a made up name on a free app that they don't know what reality really feels like anymore.
Yeah.
That the best memories in your life are not on a screen, are not in that app. the best memories in your life are the ones that you have simple conversations with, or you have a moment with another human being that means something to you, that you just, you hold in a snapshot in your head that go, if I were to pass away, those are the moments I'm going to remember. You know, I'm not, when I got 10,000 likes on a picture that means nothing to me, you know?
Yeah. It's just a dopamine rush that goes away. You know,
you're going to remember like that time you had with grandpa, you know, that didn't have social media, you know, you're going to remember the time you had with dad or mom that like, that meant something to you, you know what I mean? And I think we've just gotten away from that. And if we can bring that back and bring that back in the essence of what we do as hairdressers, that what we do is not who's going to be first at trying to create something or who's going to show something first. Cause it's like, we're all competing with one another. It's like, now you open up social media. It's like, who's doing the best shag or who's doing the best like curtain bang? It's like, dear God, like we're running this fucking rat race. Like, but who's going to have the best conversation tomorrow with their client without putting it on social media?
Yeah, I was going to say, who's going to connect with their clients? Who's going to connect with their team members, their coworkers? Who's going to inspire somebody else to be the best version of themselves?
Dude, we're having hair church right now.
Dude, we are, man. We're living it right now. That's the beauty. I think
we don't have an offer.
What's that?
Hey, we got to tell the world we don't have an offer plate, but we do have Cash Apps and Venmos.
There you go. We got PayPal. We got it all, man. take checks.
Dude, that's the beauty. That's the beauty and the essence of like what we do as hairdressers. And don't get me wrong, man. I love social media and I'm not hating on anybody that's making it happen for them on what they're doing on their platforms. Like, it's just exhausting to know I have to get up every day and manicure this shit so hard to a point where it's like, it's not even worth it. It's not even meaningful to me. It's just all I'm searching for is the false reality of like the leaves on the tree. Like how many followers are going to follow it? How many likes am I going to get? How many, you know, cause that's what's going to give me this like success like feeling. But I would rather it be like, I had a great conversation with us and I can post it and 10 people like it. I could post it to my story and 200 people like it.
Yeah.
They're always watching.
Yeah. Totally.
Give them a show, man. You know, I tell people, give everybody a show and discredit anything negative anybody's ever said about you and how you live your life. Like, just live your life in a way that, like, it's unapologetic. Don't give a fuck what other people think. And just do what makes you happy. Yeah. And you know what? Don't worry if it makes the masses like you or not. Because the people that you need to worry about is the people that's direct in your life, you know? Absolutely. And that's why I talk a lot about to veterans about like talking about their past, is because if you try to hold it in and you try to be this warrior of I suffer in silence, somebody else is going to suffer because of it.
So, hey, actually, do you know any other ex-military guys that do hair?
That do hair?
Yeah. You know who was a military guy was Jameson. He was military. He started cutting hair in the Army way back in the day.
Well, I can assure you this, man. I wasn't cutting anybody's hair. I didn't.
Totally. Totally. So, well, I mean, that's cool, though. I mean, I think I think things like that lend well to careers like we've got, you know? I mean, it's just, I don't know. There's like.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that you got to trust, you know, when you feel something in your soul, it's like, what is that feeling? You know, it's like knowing that maybe it's not giving you the most lucrative, you know, rewards. It's not giving you the most big payoff, but what is the big payoff, you know? And I always tell everybody to journal, like, sit down, write it down, like just write down like what, just be honest with what you want in life. Cause most people don't know what they want, because if you will sit down and write what you want, you're going to realize what you don't want. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's like, it's that simple, and know that like, things are going to feel like weird because it's not your territory. Just make it your territory, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like philosophical and like whatever, but thank you guys, man, for this podcast and like bringing me on and like sharing my story. Cause it's my story is in, it's a point of vulnerability that I can't talk, you know, being vulnerable to saying like, this is who I am. Like, I'm not always been like a total winner, but I'm that person that like a perseverance. I don't give up. I don't quit. I don't surrender. Like, you know, I'm the type of person that like, I'm going to lay this brick every day and eventually, hopefully I have a wall. And if not, then I learn to lay a brick, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you like lately you've been working with Aaron Coach. I remember you were doing some education, I think with somebody over in like Russia or something like that. I thought I saw that on Instagram.
Oh, Croatia.
Croatia. Okay. That's cool. So how was that?
Ivan and Mariana are the best. Like, and I love Mario and you know, the whole ZGAT. They are just amazing. But Ivan worked for ZGAT, and they went and started their own business, Kanzo Academy. And then I just gravitated to them. And then when I found out that I was going to take this job with Arnco, I just reached out and said, "Hey, I need some train the trainer classes." Like,
sure. So just for everybody that's listening, what is ZGAT?
Well, let me say, you really know, but
yeah,
just from the outside looking in, ZGAT to me is like the most badass, geometrically based new version of Sassoon that exists.
I mean, it's the most precise thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's insane.
I mean, the way they create shape is just, it's almost like Star Trek meets hair, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just crazy, geometric, just step out of the box, like beautiful. Like, it takes a lot to, if you think about how can you recreate hair, they are the ones to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so Ivan and his wife worked for them, and they left and started Kanzo Academy, and they're a Kune Academy. And the way they do the simplicity of like sections and shape, and the way that I vibe with him about like creating shape, it's just, I mean, we can talk for 9 hours on a Zoom call and just do hair, you know? Yeah. And to me, like, that's a great mentor for me, you know?
Yeah.
I was also working with Cincy, DeMarco, Marzella and Palmer. And I love them all. Like, James at 3 Education in San Diego is amazing. I mean, I could sit here and plug so many people that are so amazing, but you have to find the people that you really vibe with, that you connect with, that you can really learn from, and just geek out on hair with them, you know?
So you came back to Adam basically with Arnco. That's where you settled. What, like a year or two ago?
Yeah, about a year ago. Yeah.
Cool, man. I mean, we do carry Arnco at our salon. So like we get it, man. Arnco is awesome. I mean, it's got a great vibe. It really does.
That's our mission statement, man, is to be like, we want to be the pinnacle for hair education, you know?
Yeah.
And we're trying on the, you know, new faces, new people, new vibe, new energy, a new approach. And Adam,
you should come up here to Asheville and teach a class.
Yeah, let's do it.
No, let's do it. I'm 100%. Let's do it. I mean, I need you to deliver those scissors to us anyway.
So. Yeah.
So that just brings us to a topic. I want to ask you, like, what's your go-to combs? What do you use?
Oh man, I like Sessabon. I like YS. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Sessabon too.
I mean, I like, it just depends on like who's gonna sit in my kit and not like look all janky after it's been in the war of my clips, you know?
Sure.
You know, because I you know, I have this like roll up, and you know, I try to protect everything, but like my YS Park combs like last the longest. Sessabon, it's just like, what's going to withstand the heat and like, you know, like what's going to, be functional for me, you know?
Sure. What about,
but I'm a cool junkie. You come, you hang out with me. You're going to be like, this guy's like got more scissors than I've ever seen anybody ever own. And he's got more clips and combs. Mm-hmm. So dude, well, I traded my guns in for like pair.
I get it. I mean, we're honest to God. We're three straight guys here on, you know, talking about hair. So you better believe all three of us love tools.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Deep, deep vaults of tools.
Well, I know. I mean, I know for a fact, if you go in Jordan's.
Said Jeff, dude, we ride around like the Hell's Angels. Like,
yeah, you do. Yeah.
Talking about hair shit, you know?
Yeah, totally. If you go in Jordan's garage, he's got a freaking forge and a whole bunch of tools. You know, you go in my garage, it's the same way. So, yeah, you better believe you, like, go up to my station. There's, like, endless amount of tools. So scissor-wise, what are you using right now?
Kameko, man. That's the brand.
Tell me about it.
Dude, we have everything. We have everything from Damascus to the wooden handles, VG10. We have dry sliders. Dude, we have everything. Like we have detailers, we have 440C, we have beginner shears. We've spent, me and Jeff have spent like maybe like 6-7 years now, like creating this brand as a baby, where we didn't just go and get distributors, get people to like sell the brand. We wanted to study steel grade. We wanted to know what makes a scissor, $1,000 scissor, or a $1,200 scissor, or a $300 scissor. Mm-hmm. Not how it feels in your hand, but how the blade, what steel grade are you buying? So you know, like, how long the longevity that's going to be, like how long that's going to hold the edge. Mm-hmm. So that's just, it's just kind of been our passion. So, you know, we kind of started geeking out with the whole like Jesse James theme. You know, Jesse James is making like pizza cutters and stuff now during COVID. And that's where we got away from the, like, there's one man in Japan making scissors. And we started looking into the whole spectrum of like what makes quality steel.
Yeah. So just to let everybody know, it's Kameko. It's K-I-M-I-K-O. Where can you get these shears from?
From our website, KamikoShears.com.
Right on, man. That's awesome. I mean, I've seen them and they're freaking beautiful.
They are beautiful. And our displays are beautiful. Like,
yeah, no, your all, display's out of control.
They're handmade. We make them in-house. Yeah.
So are you guys doing education through Kameko?
Yes, we are as well.
You are. Okay.
The website as well. Like, it books me, and there's another guy, Mikey out of Nashville, Mikey Denton.
Okay.
He's absolutely amazing. We just sent him the full line of shears. He's our first person we hired to do education with us. Okay. And he is an editorial guy making a lot of videos for us. So, we love Mikey too. Like, give him a follow. Mikey Denton, he's absolutely amazing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I will. I mean, we all will. That's great, man. Well, man, we enjoy talking to you, brother. It's good to see your face.
Yeah. Hi, man. I'm looking at the watch going, damn, we talked a minute.
Hold on. Time flies, man. Time flies.
That's crazy, man. I think this is like the most silent I've ever been during a podcast. I've just been like hanging out, but like, it's been so fun to get to know you, dude. And like, I actually really, really want to hang out in real life and like continue being humans together and see where it goes.
Yeah. Thank you, man. And I'm, you know, hopefully Jay warned you, like, hey, my story is, you need a good 3 hours, you know?
So, you know, well, that kind of actually makes me want to talk to you a little bit. And I want you to talk to everybody else about this. Like, you're actually writing a book, right?
Yeah. So I'm with a ghostwriter right now, and, she's very private. She's a publisher, editor. We're in the depth of the book right now. It's called From Sniping to Snipping.
I love that. That's great.
It's my journey to become this hairdresser, but it's not a war book. It's not a military book. It's not a political book. It's a non-fictional book based on a true story that is basically like an interview, but in a very creative way, that the chapters are all mixed up and we start at the end. We start in Arlington, where I was just at this 2 weeks ago, dealing with something that I didn't even know I was dealing with, survivor's guilt, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you go on my Instagram, you'll see like some of the pictures of Arlington. Like, that was some heavy stuff, man. I'm like, I let go of some things that I've been holding. I didn't realize I was holding on for a better 15 years of, you know, and what I got from that, was, you know, walking through the cemetery and after like making peace with some of my brothers, I haven't seen, you know, I haven't visited their stones in since 2006. I started to think like, maybe this life is heaven. And as human beings, we're screwing it up.
Man,
because
I agree if we were
to come and come to this place called Earth, and there was no humans here, and you were able to roam the Earth and see all of its beauty, how would you go back and report on it? And what would you say it was?
Yeah.
Might be heaven, and we're screwing it up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to be better people to each other and better people to the Earth, man, because the Earth take care of itself. You know, think about the tree, you think about the seashell, like think about that, that forms itself on its own, you know? Don't mean to get so deep and philosophical, but like,
no, I dig it, man.
We just gotta be those kind of human beings where like we give back and give thanks to like what this Earth provides us with, you know?
I think it means a lot more to hairstylists too. Like, we got to give back to this industry and to each other, yeah. You know?
And I think we're in this like rat race of what? We're all competing with each other. Why? You know?
I've always said the same thing, man. Like, hairstylists don't compete with each other. We only compete with ourselves. That's all. That's all there ever is. They're like, so there's no reason to ever be like enemies with another salon or other hairstylist.
Yeah, undercut anybody.
Never, yeah. Man. Like, we are all in this. That's why I always loved Happy Mondays, man. Cause like, I'm like, Happy Mondays, you know, at Intrigue Salon, when all the salons come together and just like hang out, you know, and share together, that's the way it should be. You know, we shouldn't be so separate, you know? So
100%, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all in this together. There's more hair. There's so much bad hair out there.
Man, you're not lying, man. You're not lying. Well, brother, I really enjoyed hanging out and talking to you. So,
man,
I really do want to set up you coming up here to Asheville, man. Have you been to Asheville?
No, I've never.
Jesus, dude, you got to come up here.
You can crash at my place, man. I got plenty of room.
Yeah, he's got, hold on. What? Tell him about your place.
Yeah. My house is called Rammstein.
Rammstein.
It's a dope spot, man. Yeah, I've got some extra bedrooms.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's plan it, man. I'm totally down. Like I'm just, dude, I'm riding this wave right now and like, good. I'm in it and I know that it's not going to be forever, but like, I want to connect with as many people as I can.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, we'll get you up here, man. We'll set that up, man. Cause we do. So our salon, we have a Wednesday class every week, which is for kind of like the assistants and the level ones. And then like every quarter, we try to set up like an outside education class, which is the whole salon. So we have 18 stylists. So, you know, that's going to be more like what we would want you to come up for, is like just a killer, like all day class, like, you know, for everybody. That would be awesome.
Yeah. But then for the record, my request is that you come like on a Saturday to teach on a Monday.
100%.
So that we get all the time to kick it. Prior to.
Absolutely. And bring your bike.
Let's do it, man.
Your bicycle.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Not the motorcycle.
Yeah, I got the one right here.
Oh, hell yeah. Look at that sexy thing. Oh, man. You got that Cervelo? Dude, that's worth as much as your Rolex, bro. You know it.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, totally. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, bro.
Hey, thank you so much, man. Anything?
Absolutely. I'm going to stop recording. We're going to say goodbye, but stay on the line, okay?
Honor. Thank you.
Okay. See you guys.
Peace.